Hello and welcome to the intro for the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows episode 14. Talk about a wild ride. Hope you enjoyed episode 13. And my apologies to people who got caught up in a lot of the troubles that were going on. It's not good to just get left with all of the arguments and debates, and just here I am pretty much by myself, and I tried to turn the damn notifications off, and I'm just having more port and getting more rankled and doing more audio work. So I actually completed episode 13 the day before Halloween 2014, and I'd done the original writing the previous year, so I'm trying to get caught up, get this thing going. It was around that time, back in October of 2013, that Helena stepped in and our friendship began. And because of that, I started to go faster from her support to the work. And it was also around that time I found out I'd had a large audience the whole time via the traffic graph. So you might imagine how that affected me, seeing the hard work grabbed, bringing Willie Loomis back home. And I was just falling to pieces from that. To have all of that research, humor, entertainment, looking for the reaction, and all I'm seeing is numbers. It's very stressful, and as things were getting lonelier and lonelier out here, as well as channeling Willie Loomis, I just cracked. So, yeah. Some people who just started the series are going to have to listen to all those intros and stuff, and just listen to me get all frustrated. But that is the difficulty of loneliness and knowing that you have so much talent and you're putting it out there to try and get the reaction, like I said in episode one, the intro. By that time, I had developed a better system of construction for this series. I would do the demos before placing the text down to read, and I started hearing their voices more, and I wasn't hearing my voice so much. So the way the episodes were churning out both convinced me and entertained me on so many walks to work or to the bus or to the market. I just thought, if I am this entertained by it, and bad storytelling is something complained about in much new material, while the music and special effects seem to be all that matters now, I decided, well, let's make it better. Let's do this. This could go on quite a long time. So I got out all the tools I needed, myself included, and set to work harder. When I started looking around and doing some of the research in the Dark Shadows fandom mainly, I noticed multiple patterns that struck me as troubling. Because with me, I was just watching Dark Shadows on my own, and eventually my husband joined in, and we were not part of any kind of Dark Shadows community whatsoever. And then I was really excited about the film, and a few things happened in there that I was happy with, and I wasn't happy with the whole thing. Then I saw the reaction online to it, and that's when I started to notice the Dark Shadows community and how they behave, and I was like, oh man, this is rough. This is so devastating to see that much anger, just an entertainment product. And I'm getting the same thing, apparently, with the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. Just because I'm trying to find some people who like it will talk to me about it. You know, that's why all this file sharing has been happening. And, you know, like I said, turn it off if you don't want to hear it. And I don't even understand why some people even play it. You know, I look at my stats and I see you guys skipping around on not just the intros, but the episodes. I'm like, did your batteries die or what's going on? Are you just looking for one piece of it? Or are you, what, you know, I go to the podcast and I'm going to just kind of mess flip around. Like, what are you guys doing skipping these things? What's the point of even touching it? So I was searching and I saw some harassing comments on blogs under videos that anyone shooting for a non-Julia Barnabas pairing were not going to be treated well. And I also saw this against someone vying for a Julia Elliot pairing. Because Julia and Elliot are intellectual, someone was very excited by that idea, and of course whoever they shared the discussion with was rather harsh in response to that. But mostly what I was seeing while I hunted around was Julia is the only woman for Barnabas. Like I say, I just was lining everyone up to listen to him. One friend of mine recently told me, you know, I'm happy with the idea of Barnabas being with someone he reciprocated, but when it comes to this Julia issue, I feel bad for her. Like, why pair her up with this guy? It just sounds so bad for her. And yes, I have to agree on that level. Glad I took so much psychology and therapy work with people, but this is still one of those things that blows my mind. And not so much that the stories for that pairing are out there. A fair amount would make sense, but the extreme wealth of it, while lacking so many other pairings. Not sure if I ever came across one, but I'm pretty curious if there are Roxanne stories for Barnabas out there. The other things I noticed is getting the characters accurate has also been a problem, and there has been this idea that one can tell their own story but just tack on the names of Dark Shadow's characters. Well, if that's the case, why would the pairing make any difference? what difference does it make if it's not really the characters? But still, I didn't start seeing those until the summer of 2013. I saw the Maggie Barnabas story. I saw the Josette Barnabas story. Like, they had been started in about July or June of last year. And my view of that is by this time, everyone got so riled up at the 2012 movie, a few gals decided, well, they probably won't bother bugging me now that that's out there. They're occupied hating on that. Another possibility is I get the impression that most of the work was done with troubles to how much of the program was available to its fans. We seem to be getting more accuracy now in the fan work, but that's mostly coming from people who have written in other fandoms, so getting the characters accurate for other fandoms is a general staple. Unless one is doing a farce, you'll likely get some folks irritated if one got Captain Kirk, Spock, or Dr. McCoy inaccurate. Plus, in Dark Shadow's work, I rarely was seeing Roger, and usually when I did see him, he didn't seem much like Roger. So in that, I'm seeing quite a change right now. As some might be aware, I had to get out of the Facebook racket because after seeing all the odd politics over the years, which shows that enjoyers of what I'm doing are usually the Shire types who have been fragmented by all the rest, so when it comes to enjoyment, speaking up hasn't been something they've been able to do, especially when it comes to material they prefer. Now, the way the internet has been creating in us these robotic methods for communication, that can't be making the ability to discuss things any easier. But it throws me for a loop. Most of the chat is there. You've got thousands of people discussing these shows like crazy. But for some reason, in the fan work, however good it is or talked about, that's not really given to the creators of that work. Or, as my friend told me, it sounds like you have people who love your work, but when they don't express to you what they enjoyed, it's like there's this huge party, and the party is in your honor, but you're not invited, Daryl. The party is for you, and it's for your work, but you are left out in a shed somewhere by yourself. And I have to agree with that, too. The other thing I tried to do when I saw that romantic pairings were the issue was try to reach just a set of fans that would either prefer it or at least say, okay, not for me, no big deal. Then, earlier this year, someone found me, was absolutely excited by the work, and brought me to that enormously populated group of Dark Shadows fans. Now, that kind of celebration got me 7 hours sleep and made me think, well, if this is how I'm going to get commentary, okay, let's just share away. Let's just put it everywhere. But unfortunately, the other thing it did was put me in a place where people would endlessly discuss and butt heads about the program or which pairing and all of that. There was some riling of an anti-Julia fan, and so many people were getting upset, and I eventually just used some sound reasoning, asking questions, how do you see the pairing as making sense, and how strongly is it revealed in the program that there is a mutual attraction? I was trying to simmer things down. Now, as some of you know, I'm not in the realms of easy transportation. It's approximately a mile for me to get to and from the market. So I went, got my groceries, carried them home, got back on that fan site, and the whole thing had erupted yet again. So I sat down, typed out more calm questioning and discussion, and finally, people settled down. Now, I would not do that if I did not care about people. However, when it comes to the idea of should love, and my husband says maybe the way they express it is a semantics problem or something, but the should love, I keep shaking my head. I'm completely flabbergasted at the very notion. It's not something I have seen anywhere but in the Dark Shadows fans, and specifically for Barnabas Collins. That question is probably wanting a change in format from should to who do you personally prefer seeing him with? And that's where the trouble is. People are saying should and then claiming it's opinion and preference. If it's opinion and preference, why not word it that way? So having to come into this world of should love and Julia, this is one I have not been able to fully solve. But there are the Julia fans who feel bad for her, and in the main, the ones where it's just about pity or sympathy, those fans love the idea of Professor Stokes vying for her affections. Instead, they see that as being a great solution, and the fans who are in it for accuracy have told me, you're not making that up. Professor Stokes was definitely interested in Dr. Hoffman. I say, okay. To me, I just listened to the characters and identified with who they were and what their needs are, or were, or whatever. I was like, if I'm in this for Sam Evans, I'm in this for everyone. So let's go down the line and like a tired mama. All right, what do you want? What do you want? What do you want? Tony and Carolyn ate away at me first. So, hey, this could work out for both them and for everyone. So there is this spiral upward for this series rather than the spiral downward, and not just the soap opera characters, but Morticia's been telling me. Oh, that poor girl in 1795. Wouldn't it be nice if we could help her out? And I'm like, well, okay, Morticia, not sure why, but we'll see what we can do. Even now, the process of creation, like when I was incorporating Willie back in, there were things he wanted to say. So I'm at the microphone, right? And I'm doing the performance. And in a lot of cases, I'll be able to type down extra dialogue, perform that, and carry on with the rest. I have to edit out all of this typing I'm doing in between. So he's getting all weirded out. You know, I was like holding onto the desk, like, and I'm like, I got more things to say to Barnabas. I got, okay, all right, let's go. Let's get to it. And I'm like, okay, Willie, it's going to be okay. I'll get it. I'll figure it out. And the commentary and the positivity for this to me, not just off to the side where I can't read or hear it, that's the fuel for this kind of work, and that would be way better to focus on than getting caught up in Facebook debates and romantic should voting polls, which, by the way, I kept turning the notifications for that one in particular off. I just turned the notifications off, and I'm getting still, and I don't know why I kept getting them. Yeah, hopefully it was providential, and the short attention spans will filter that into something shrug-worthy, but yeah, if my listeners don't discuss my work with me, in my loneliness and inebriation, stuff like that comes up, which is why I'm trying not to hang out all day hooked up to those things. I'd rather have long-term discussions about what I'm doing so I can finish this whole thing. It's hard for me to believe how much attention I get for ideas I've intended to use for ages, you know, months, years, but still haven't made it to the pit of ultimate dark shadows. It's like, just because I'm thinking about it, it's already happened or something. No, we don't have Dr. Hawkeye Pierce yet. And I started putting that together, I think about a year ago, or maybe more, just aggravating. And yeah, I understand it's a little difficult to try and go through all those scenes and everything and try to just write down what your personal reactions are, because we're more able to do that person to person, just speaking out loud. But there's got to be a way. There's got to be a way. And I've listened to my intros get more and more troubled, and I would rather go back to how I sounded calm and easy going from episode 1 to 6. I've got a feeling you'd also be happier with that. So hanging around on Facebook, clicking away, ain't going to do it. I, myself, am still in my prime and would like to get this thing finished. All I can figure out about the negativity is the exposure of the daytime drama likely is, as Morticia told Victoria in my 13th episode, that it's like a contagion. For me, I get rankled at any kind of invalidation towards anyone. And here I am in this Julia discussion being told my work is only text, or words to that effect, having my troll reviews said to be critiquing, quote-unquote, and people saying things in the fan work, as far as romantic pairings goes, are closer to an even split, as well as invalidating a ton of other hard research that I've done. I am a person who has had invalidation towards physical injuries and illnesses. One example, as a kid, I was in a ton of pain from a fall, and I wasn't able to move very well at all. Now, my dad told my mom, don't take her to the doctors, it's going to be too expensive. But thankfully, she did anyway. And what did we discover? My collarbone was broken. And that is one example of much of the invalidation I've been through. I've got a massive list to the point where I still have not met anyone who has been through what I have. So my reaction to any kind of invalidation towards anyone, fictional or real, gets to me. And miscommunication, big time. That's misunderstandings. And my husband has had to pull me through a lot of that because he is a very good negotiator. I've worked in psychology. He worked in sociology. He has a master's degree in that. I just did stuff in high school and college, but I never got a degree. But I've done the hands-on therapy work. So it's more about experience and studying than about degrees. In a way, all that might be providential too, because with people giving me so much negativity, I see behavioral patterns that are very familiar to me. And some of those also came from exposure to things like excessive entertainment, where the view of the world and people's actions is all about conflict. Now, as you know, on your everyday events, you're having to work, getting stuff done, putting the papers away, da 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 da, going, out to a restaurant or something, which I rarely get to do. Much of the time, we open doors for others. We pass them with a nod or a smile, just trying to make sure everything runs smoothly. Well, why not online so much? Why not for fan work so much, or even all the bloggers out there? Some of them have social anxiety, and they get lonely, so when you look over what they're up against, especially if you're a writer yourself, why is it so difficult to have the discussions with them that they're looking for? I'm not the only person who is troubled by this turn of events for the last decade. Absorbing it all won't do much for the long term, but seeking out your preference and what you enjoy, and finding others who either made it or enjoy it with you. Now that is cooperative, and it also promotes a lot of personal growth, which I'm not seeing so much online lately. It's better than it was, but it's still fairly harsh out here. I just wish things didn't have to get so bad for people to start blinking awake. It's like ignoring family for years, or taking them for granted, then someone goes to the hospital and suddenly everyone flocks in. There's got to be a few lonely people out there who see these people walk in they've missed and haven't been in touch with, however much they might have tried, for years. The thought or even the phrase must happen. It took this? You're like sitting laying in your hospital bed, all these people you haven't seen for years but wanted to, you just, oh, I'm busy, I'll get you. You could like get something happening to you, and then all of a sudden it took this? It took this? That's what this feels like. Now, on to the good stuff. I have finally been getting some help in commentary. Pat did a great job, but I haven't seen anything from him for episodes since July, and that was for episode 10. But I love the conversational commentary, especially how one listens to the episode. Or, oops, my iPod died, or I was falling asleep and kept waking up to Neil Sedaka. just stuff like that, or like what I've been doing with Oisin Nivoy, Stand Fast, and Damn the Devil. Countess Dupre is all complaining about American food while continuing to eat it. It did make my cold pizza sound good. And we rarely order any pizza delivery. And also, I did that just wanting something more constructive to do than share file on Facebook all the live long day. Plus, Oisin's work is so fantastic, with all of the research and accuracy involved. It's the last thing I can concentrate on. I've been stuck in all of these fandoms. To get them accurate, I don't get to have much escapism beyond her work. So I held off on it for a long time, trying to savor it. Thankfully, it's chunky enough that my focus did maintain, especially getting away from the nerve-wracking qualities of a social network. But that's it, really. Not a whole lot else that my psyche can handle for entertainment. My focus will just not allow it. But let's look at this bit. I get flustered that I'm not told what was enjoyed, and that's been a problem for ages, although, well, I guess because this side project is three fandoms and less characters, Margaret Suzette Dupre has a ton of reviews now, and I'm thinking, wouldn't a marriage novel with intimate moments, well, you'd think that would be the dirtier secret that would have less commentary while the radio drama is PG or even G most of the time and reached vaster realms. But for some reason, it's not making the grade like that marriage novel has been. And with commentary, I'd say make it a book club adventure. Don't worry about being a critic. We've got enough. But just like, you know, a book club. So what happens when I do get commentary for an episode of The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows? Let me show you.
For episode 3, Strago of Brooklyn, I trickled aside for poor Willie Loomis and his jigsaw puzzle joy, the 660-piece jigsaw puzzle of a cloud. A snort for Dorothy and her complicated cheesecake! At last, man! What is it, 3 years later I'm getting this news? A warm smile for Sophia calling the Collins family what they are, rich snobs! Your Mrs. Johnson is lovely. To Madam Slick, brought home long clothes and all, my dear Roger. Madam Slick, because that's Cassandra, man. I haven't heard this in forever. Oh, my God. And I had forgotten the bladed glove fellow and the knitted sweater part. Cute. What a cat. Now I did not care for Adam in Dark Shadows, but it was good of you to make use of him. Here, Sophia's every line was gold, which is what she told me when I first posted it. Many kudos for the Laura Palmer / Twin Peaks / Laura Parker and for Sophia sending the newlyweds to Jack's Fry House. Yes. Oh, can I keep going?
Sure.
There's more. Oh my gosh. It is about time, woman. And her birthday's tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
So I'm definitely, if these are all hers, I'm gonna say, dude, it's your birthday and you just gave me the biggest gift. Okay. Episode 4. You capture Sam's frequent occasions of being lost in thought with every single eloquent. Your creation of his chopped speech and little vocal habits are transportive. I'm happy for Tony and Carolyn. Your Carolyn is surprisingly delicate. Ah, and Liz and Roger, I can never pass up a chance to praise them. If they had their own spinoff show, I'd be the number one fan of it. Wink. Wadsworth is so good with Barnabas. I feel him approving the old vampire with every chat they share. Oh, improving. I feel him improving the old vampire with every chat they share. Okay, now for 5. Man, 4 and 5 have been so lonely. Okay, 5, Saving Pop, which was on last night. Nice to see Stokes. You already know I love this poppin' great episode. I appreciated the captain showing up to lighten things a bit. Barnabas and Maggie in the coffee shop is my favorite exchange. Yeah, that was when I was listening to that last night. It's making me cringe, but so did the show. So it's adequate, you know, because he's all, oh, this is too much. This is too much. You're giving me too much. And 6, coffee, tea, and cribbage. Man, when did she have time for this? I guess she was sewing by hand. Oh, yep. She says, my sewing continues. And I feel like I'm sitting here with my needles and embroidery threads, sitting there with Barnabas and Julia. I love the hellhound hanky. I don't remember what that is. And I think that should be the name of a band.
Hellhound hanky. Yeah, I don't remember what that is either.
Andre and the captain are quite good here. Poor David, how confusing to be told to seek Sarah. That kid's treated like a yo-yo on a good day. Ha ha, to the estate being built on scandal. And how? What do you mean, Liz? This estate is built on scandal. Where have you been? Liz and Roger have me checking for brandy, and the coffee, while not on the perk, is at least brewing. Oh, thank you. At last.
You see? Wouldn't that be better than having me vent my spleen over all the politics? But when comments come in like that, I ain't nodding or feeling accomplished. I am laughing and having a good time for a change. I believe supporting that attitude would really improve things, and we can all just enjoy this thing together rather than sneaking off into a corner to enjoy it. At the same time, you know, people saying, oh, I'm shoving this thing down everyone's throat. It's like, well, just trying to find some people who want to chat about it. Like I say, you know, 25 people, I'd be more than happy. 5 comments per episode. Nice chunky ones like I've been getting from Gary and Warren, which is absolutely wonderful. And you can just break it with the compliments. I mean, they're nice to get. They're way better than getting the hate, but I don't want to be popular, and I don't want to be praised so much. I don't want the trolls, but I'd like just some, like you would do for anyone. Whatever you might say to somebody you're sharing it with. And I've told people, please don't share my work unless, you know, don't tell somebody unless they're a talker, because I don't want any more silent people. I just... I'm sitting here thinking, how many hundreds of people am I talking to now? Jeez Louise. Oh, man. That I tried to, you know, speak back and get him to, come on out. It's okay. You can like Barnabas Maggie, you know. It's not my only, you know, it's not my only freaking pairing in this thing. I just was listening, did the research, saw this, that, and the other thing. Nightmare. And like I said earlier in this intro, I'm like, why the hell isn't anybody talking to me? Why didn't they review? They've been reading it for over a year. And I'm just, and the one lady who did apologize, she should just be almost Peter Pants. And then, you know, I do the research and I found out, oh, well, it's a romantic bearing for Barnabas. Great. Great. Just my frickin' luck. So sad. So sad. Especially when people, they misinterpret what I'm saying, whereas I got something on my blog the other day. Very nice gentleman, I believe he is, as far as I know, to my knowledge. That I was making a claim that Barnabas could only be happy with Chosette. It's like, did anybody read or listen to the romantic pairings? You know, it's like I lined them up. I said which ones blew my mind. I said which ones made sense depending on certain people. But for the most part, what I see with Barnabas Collins is his preference is for the youthful, gregarious ladies. When you go back to 1795 and see how honorable he was before his curse, and of course the one night stand, which he felt ashamed of, and he was just like, what am I, you know, why am I going after this woman? Oh, because we have those issues with our emotions. But before that, being honorable, having insecurities, trying to be a better person, that he was also that same kind of youthful gregariousness. If you ignore some of the wrinkles. But Stelling have that youthful glow about him and that gregarious nature in Barnabas. It would make sense that, yeah, Victoria Winters, Maggie Evans, Kitty Soames as Josette. I don't think he'd like her if she wasn't Josette, from what I know about her. And, of course, Josette and, I guess, Roxanne, like, youthful, gregarious types. So I don't know where that kind of miscommunication, how it builds in, how it gets into people's heads, what my opinions are or what my personal preferences are. And that troubles me a lot, hearing about just all the bickering and stuff. And my main thing is just an issue with invalidation. That's a big one. Miscommunication, misunderstanding.
Oh, now we got the workshop with Daryl's husband. Hello?
Hello.
All right. Now that we know what the problem is, what we've discovered through at least a few people where there was all kinds of bizarre little romantic pairings issues, it made some people... It's more, you know, I notice the people who've been in the fandom longer, they seem to be the ones who had trepidation about reviewing the work. Well, one aspect of that is supporting someone who's doing this romantic pairing for Barnabas. Or maybe even just a happier... What was it that Roger said? Translucent beclouding version of Dark Shadows. In a bit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, Roger. Or at least some translucent beclouding. I think hopefully that's coming down. We're getting less worrisome. But I notice younger fans, people who they weren't the run home from school kids. They're okay with this pairing. Especially what fascinates me is that I saw it. Just from the research of, you know, we were watching it, and I was just kind of like, okay, you know, there's, we got the kidnapping, you know. And the main thing that I did, the reason I did that was, I was like, okay, Willie, I don't know what to do with him. Let's interrupt it to the point that Willie goes to Wincliffe, so he'll be out of the picture. Because I couldn't figure out how to get things better and better and better unless he was there. But unfortunately, that's also the point at which, after Maggie's kidnapping, when I shot for farce, I was just going to have her forget. And then I was like, no. That's not going to work. I got to take this more seriously. Because it got more serious than I anticipated. And that just comes naturally from channeling. So what I notice with the younger fans who haven't been involved as long, they're not as perturbed by speaking up for that romantic pairing for Barnabas.
Probably because they're newer to it. They haven't been through all the usual little fan group bickerings about whatever they're bickering about. In this case, romantic pairings. Who does Barnabas love? Mm-hmm. Etc. Yada yada.
So getting them to speak up. But then at the same time, younger people are a little more fragmented by the way entertainment is now, where they feel like they got to jump in and absorb everything and, you know, just keep on flip. I got to get this and it done. Which, I was a little like that, and a couple friends were too, where it's like, I gotta watch this, I gotta watch that, or whatever. And it's like, that I finally realized, you really don't have to, Daryl. You can just pick what you like, and that's what I've been doing. And that's why we've turned away so many cable advertisers, door-to-door salesmen, and people trying to sell us that. No, we're gonna pick what we want.
I don't think there are anywhere actual door-to-doors. Oh, maybe there were.
Yeah, there were.
Dish Network or something.
Yeah. And I remember one guy was like, man, you're a hard sell. And I'm like, well, I got no reason to buy. I already got my choices set up. And also, the other thing about that is we're not all into, we like to block ads. We don't like advertisements. Yeah, I remember sometimes when we used to take vacations, just coming home and seeing where we were, you know, just seeing all the billboards, and it just got on my nerves. All these things. You know, you want to stare at the trees or something while you're sitting on the bus, and all you get to see is just ad, and you know, all these fast food restaurants or whatever. You just want to see a little bit of nature for a change. After we'd seen so much nature, because usually we'd go to seaside places or areas that had, or areas.
Or not actually having billboards.
Or we had what we would like going to see friends in bohemian areas where the advertising is smaller and the things that we like are more in the underground realm. A relief from mainstream media, which is also good. And that's why I've been shooting for the bohemian types, because the bohemian types are going to be more creative, outspoken, more interested in good storytelling.
more interested in complete wackiness, which I think, as I've said about the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, is breaking up the storyline of Dark Shadows, and here you got a bunch of gatecrashers coming in. And when I say gatecrashers, because I've said that multiple times about this multi-fandom, I almost feel like when that image comes into my head, and I'm curious if other people think this, of Wadsworth, he has kind of this, a similar car, where now it's a convertible, and the top is down, and he's driving it, right? Just try to do the butler thing. There's all these characters in the car, and they're all driving a Collinwood and just ready to break it all up. That's what, in my mind, sometimes when I call them gate crashers, that's what I see.
In the car, all cruising?
Yeah, in the movie Clue, but now okay. It is a convertible, and okay. There's all these, Lily Munster, the Addams Family, just everybody's...
Right. All the other everybody's, characters.
Yeah, they're all in there, and they're driving a Collinwood in there. All right, we're going to break this stuff up and help these people out. They're all coming over. And I was telling Keremia how it felt like, in a strange way, I was thinking about how all these gatecrashers were just going to help Collinwood. And now it seems like, in comparison to other fandoms with Dark Shadows, the way that people interpret those other fandoms, like The Ghost of Mrs. Muir, The Addams Family, The Munsters, Bewitched, people who like Clue, people who like Wadsworth, it's starting to like break down a lot of the old Dark Shadows ideas about how it should be interpreted, which already is changing just from the passing of time. And so I remember telling Karami, I was like, it's almost like seeing the perspective of the other fandoms is also helping, or could potentially help, the Dark Shadows fandom in general. Just to say, hey, let's go with not so serious, because even when people are like, oh, it's just so serious, and it's like, well, with Roger Collins? Some of his humor is like Dr. Bones McCoy. And even some of the 1795 characters, you know, they'll say, oh, like Peter. And Peter did a really horrible job of covering up the family history. I think he put it on the chair.
I don't remember what he did, but I remember it was really painful. It was just like really pathetic.
It was like he put a napkin over it or something.
Yeah.
Good job, Peter. And
he covered it with a handkerchief labeled "Please do not move."
Yeah, almost. But one of the funniest things that I think has ever said by Peter Bradford was Trask comes in and it's just, is there anything that you would like? And he's all, right now, your absence. Something like that. I'm like, yeah, this show can be funny every once in a while.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
Most things are.
Yeah.
It's uncommon for something to be totally serious all the time. I mean, it certainly happens, but...
Yeah, or like Oisin, when she first started reading The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, you know, looking over it, she's all... You know, one thing I love about your work is how much the characters really sound like themselves, even when they are saying things that, naturally, they only say in our dreams, fantasies, semi-hysterical musings, etc., not in the show itself. Things that we wish they would say. Yeah, you know, just channeling the characters, it's like, here comes Wadsworth and Slimer, because Elizabeth's not in the first episode. And then the second episode, it's almost like she's like, or all the characters are like, okay, things have gotten not only stressful crazy, but they've gotten wacky now. So let's just all relax, let her hair down. So she's saying stuff in episode two like...
Well, I don't. What's the Wizard of Oz reference?
That was the thing I was hitting on where Elizabeth, you know, she's letting her hair down because everything's just gotten so damn wacky. She hadn't seen Slimer in the previous episode because she wasn't home. And... they're trying to figure out what Victoria's saying, because she's like, oh, where's this guy? Where's that guy?
And then... when she comes back.
Yeah, and she,
where's,
you know...
where's Toto or whatever.
Yeah, and
or
when I was revising episode two, I almost wanted to take out the Victoria coming back from the past, and then I'm like, no, where's Burke? Where's Peter? Add the Scarecrow. Add the Scarecrow.
That was the line.
And then it's like, wait, the Scarecrow, where is he? And then Carolyn's like, now I'm really lost. And Elizabeth says, that one just has to be from a book she read.
Yeah, no, I remember now. Yeah.
So that's an example of Elizabeth letting her hair down and finally also admitting to Carolyn, you know what, I'm not looking under the bed for any reason. The chamber pot idea just grosses me out. And she goes on about that a little bit. So everybody's kind of letting their hair down. And Roger, it's easy to let his hair down because he already kind of does it to begin with.
One thing I'd love to do at some point is get a Louis Edmonds famous type flub in. His flubs are fantastic because they are what somebody would actually do if they messed up what they were saying.
I remember kinda the
goes,
one.
Oh. Yeah, he's got oh, and then he reiterates in there.
Ancestors.
Oh,
ancestors.
Help my ancestors. My ancestors are over there. Or the other one I like is where he's talking about coming up the road and he was like, it's about 100 miles. It seemed like 100 miles. And then he reiterates what the actual line is. It's something that I would really like to do at some point because he was just so good at that. So, not really getting on to the point here.
Yeah, I noticed.
It's just too fun to talk about it, and I can edit out whatever I don't need. So, what would your advice be for people getting kind of unscared now that we've had episode 13?
Okay, what are you asking? What's unscared?
With some of the people I've talked to, they say, yeah, this has been a problem for a while for us. I was doing the research, and then I'd start to privately message a few people and talk to them individually and just say, is it as bad as I predicted? You know, I've been doing this research about how rough it's been with the Julia Absolutists, not the Julia people who are like, oh, well, I feel sorry for her, but the Julia Absolutists where it's like, this is the way it's supposed to be. And they confessed, yeah, it's gotten bad. And the younger the people are, the more upset they are about it. So my question to you is, how do we get them on track with talking to either the creators of what they like or people who like the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows? What would be your advice for getting the comments in so we can just get it on the roll again, you know, like I had last year? Taking notes while listening.
Oh, okay. Yeah, if you're going to make comments, it's very helpful to jot down notes as you go along, like your favorite bits or whatever, or just things that strike you while you're reading it.
Or listening.
Or listening. I think I did it when I was reading, so that's what's
right
in my head is reading right. It. But yeah, whether you're reading it or listening to it. I mean, it doesn't have to be, you know, just quick little notes that you'll know what they're referring to when you finish, and then you can throw a comment in mm-hmm. like that or throw your comments in. As to encourage people, you know, I don't know.
This is
people's.
Yeah.
Just do what they do. I don't know.
I think at this point it should be a little less scary because 13's already out. We've got a solid piece of fan work now where Julia gets Barnabas and Maggie together. So that should help, I would hope.
I'm still what's less scary?
It's like what Karamia was telling me on Skype voice call. She said, hey, you know, maybe there is, let's say, somebody either in the UK or somebody somewhere, and they're like, well, gosh, I love this so much, and I really want to put a comment down, but maybe some haters will come and get me if I do that.
Oh, right. I remember you telling me about that.
Yeah. Okay. And I would say, do it anonymously. Make up some phony name.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if you're worried about getting harassed for something you put up, yeah, put it up under a fake name or just as guest or something so
right.
that nobody can... I mean, if that is actually a concern for people, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's fine for me. And that's the main thing of this having been so expensive and hard to do. But the inspiration will come when people say, oh my gosh, this was funny, that was funny, whatever. The other aspect is being distracted by so many online robotic maneuvers, you know, so you don't step away and just do something quiet. Like I had one lady who did put one review down for episode one because she was saying, I have this hour a night that I have to do something that doesn't involve staring at a screen. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, you know, and I used to do that too, where it was like a lights out for a half hour, an hour, just to de-stress when I came home from work.
Yeah, I remember.
And that was really helped a lot. Trying to tap back into maybe the memory of writing letters, because a lot of these people are old enough where writing letters is not something that never happened, that they never did. So I would say shoot for a letter writing aspect just a little bit. Just think of it that way, where you're writing a letter to a buddy.
Oh, okay. If you have letter writing experience, that would be helpful advice, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
To just think of it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Like casual chat. Like, in case you're intimidated that I am putting down a review. It's like, well, you're just chatting. You're putting comments in. You're, you know, saying what you're saying. You're not, like, writing your thesis.
You make it a book club experience. Now, I think we've got through the workshop. What do you remember from episode 14? It's called Reunion at the Old House. Does that help?
No.
Okay.
Sorry, I usually don't know the titles.
All right. So we have, and this is going to take a while because it's so, I really worked hard on it. It's actually gotten to the point where I am doing everybody's performances separately, which is interesting too, because I think with any radio drama, most of the time, everybody's doing their performances separately. They're actually not in the same room together with a lot of new ones.
Oh, so basically you'll do the lines of one character in a row and then do the lines of another character?
Yeah, 14 has mainly been done that way.
Okay.
My old performances of Maggie are good, so I just have to amplify a tiny bit of what she says. Wadsworth's been done separately. Willie's been done separately. I know in episode 13 I did them in tandem, and that was hard for my vocal cords. It wasn't a good thing, because they're both so difficult to do, and Willie especially. And also, you know, I've got on one earphone. I'm wearing a headset, so on one earphone I've got Clue playing, and on the other, the Christmas presents with John Carlin, and I'm just like, I'm trying to do them both, listen to them both. It was awful. It was so difficult to do. So with this one, I was like, okay, just do Willie, then do Wadsworth, then do Barnabas, then do Pop, then do Hoffman. Like I say, you know, it's hard work, and I want to be pushed just to go faster because this is really good stuff to do. It's really good to be occupied, and I can't do anything else. That's been a problem for a year, and you can vouch for that.
Yeah, she's pretty much stuck on this subject and project. Other unrelated pop culture entertainments, for the most part conversations, are she quickly loses interest and doesn't follow.
And breaking that cycle, you remember when I was writing my original material and I had to break the cycle because of everything bad that was happening, and what happened to me when I did that, when I cut the muse off?
You suffered?
Yes.
And then couldn't turn it. It wasn't like flipping a switch off and turning it back on. You flipped it off and then couldn't turn it back on.
So that's why this isn't stopping. You know, that's not why, this is why I can't stop, because I had the previous experience with my original material, and I looked at what I was going through with the struggle of this, and I said, well, you could try to stop. Wait a second. What happened when you did that before, 8 years ago? You lost your muse. You got writer's block. You got anhedonia. Your hair fell out. You got frigid. And you started watching Dark Shadows. So, stopping this is not really an option.
Right. That still doesn't explain to me why it's, like, your only focus. Because even with your own writing, you weren't so focused on it.
The original material was set up from things I'd worked on for at least 10 years. Those characters are really distant, whereas these characters are my adopted kids, and they're around me all the time. It's also because in order to restore the original magic of this, trying to juggle more than all of these fandoms is breaking the cycle already. So if I forced myself out of it, I would lose the momentum, and whatever propels me makes it impossible to do that. The other thing, gosh, that's hard to explain. I think if I got enough commentary and this became a healthier process, then I would be able to enjoy other things. Because when I was writing it and making the demo, I was able to do that because I didn't know I had that big audience at the whole time.
Okay.
So that, yeah, when I see the numbers, it does not make me feel, you know, the widespread amount of numbers. It doesn't make me feel accomplished. It gives me the creeps because in my purview of entertainment, if somebody's asking you, talk to me about what I'm doing, if you enjoy it, boom, I'm going to tell them. It's not hard.
Yeah, and that you can see that these, based on the numbers, it's pretty obvious that these people are going back to it and going back to it and aren't saying anything.
Yeah, so that just makes me feel like, what's going on?
Communication and conversation.
Yeah, and I don't have to hear from everybody, but you think that 5% or something, or 1%, because it's like if we've looked at the data for the three different websites, much less other websites I found, I don't have any control of those websites. It's got to be about 500 people at least. So 5 perspectives would be 1%. Not even getting the 1% yet, it's giving you the jitters, you know? And it's almost like every single one of those 500 people thinks they are the only person listening. And the other thing that has been driving me nuts is, really wanted to talk to you about this. There is this idea that if you get your numbers, that's your applause. Other people seem to feel that way about their work, where they see the numbers and they're like, oh, great, everybody's enjoying it. And I'm like, that doesn't prove anything. It doesn't prove anything. Mm-hmm. They could be flipping off the speaker right now for all we know.
Yeah.
And of course, I don't want to hear from those people.
To me, I think it's just a mindset. You're looking for communication. They're not so much looking for communication. I think communication might be a bonus, but that's not real. They're not really looking for it. So just seeing that, hey, a bunch of people are reading this or listening to this or whatever is like, hey, great. But you're more focused on getting interaction and communication. Therefore, the numbers are emphasizing, hey, you're not getting the communication.
Yes, thank you. And when I've talked about a possible 25 people speaking up, maybe all of them could just have a tiny comment, one line that they feedback. Whereas, you know, I would prefer the 5 chunky ones, where it's like, I like this.
Yeah.
Oh, but I am a little blown away, and I think this is mainly in Dark Shadows fan work. As long as they know people have looked at it, that's more important for some reason.
More important than
getting communication about it.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's almost like, you know, my story is my version, and the more people look at it, the more they agree with me. I think that seems to be the mentality for the most part. Whereas the younger of us, who do interruption, who try to look at the accuracy, who do things that try to make the creation a convincing version, we're more about wanting the communication or wanting the reaction of, what did you enjoy? What were you touched by? What's your insight to it? Because if you're reading a book, I mean, you got to be enjoying something. That's why I say that the book club aspect. And so that's what a lot of the younger creators are looking for. I think viewing it as a letter writing idea, and doesn't have to be a 4-page letter, would appeal to older fans because they lived in a world a long time ago where there was no internet. They had to write letters, wait for all that stuff. That's the hardest thing for me to accept about the online world, because we even see memes where it's like, this was how the world I lived in. I lived in a world of reel-to-reel tapes or cassette tapes, or this is what we did. And it's like, well, okay, why don't you go back to some of that down-to-earth living? You know, if you're so upset about the way things have changed, focus yourself on things like letter writing again. It's worth it. I think it's way worth it.
Yeah, if you're upset about things changing,
mm-hmm.
then why not do some of the actions that you miss doing?
Right.
No, I just want to complain about it.
Thank you.
Using the very thing I'm complaining about, I'll use the tool I'm upset about existing to complain about these things that I miss, but don't really miss because I don't want to actually do them.
Yes.
I just want to complain.
Yeah, and isn't it interesting that much of the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows came into being and is coming more into being because of pen pals, because of letter... I mean, I got 2 pen pals interested. One has been interested from the get-go. Another one is like, okay, I'm going to go through the whole coffin box set and then I'm going to come back. She was the one who was like, I'm having dreams about people talking about Burke. And I got...
Oh! Oh, gosh, okay.
I sent her a couple, 2 or 3 CDs, and then she sent me a spindle recently. So it was like a Christmas present, and I was like, okay, we're going to... And I'm still waiting for a letter, because she said a letter to come, and I was like, all right. You know, and she saw the same thing. She saw, I've been watching it, I'm up to this episode, and I agree with you about Maggie's identity troubles, and I think what you're doing makes a lot of sense, and it's good for her, and I like that you were concerned about Willie. She said that months and months ago, because she listened to the intro to episode 2 a little bit, and then she was like, well, I got to get through more of the Dark Shadow series so I can pick up on everything. And she also got my playlist of the songs that were at the end of every one of my episodes. And she was like, this is great. You know, I love these songs. Thank you for this list.
Mm.
And that was so long ago, but she's had a lot of troubles. But it was good to hear from her. Good to know that she was doing better. bad to know that she had been doing so bad, but at the same time, yet another pen pal. And that's the thing about this, is I would prefer it to be a pen pal thing than just to have everybody just soaking it up online. And,
well, yeah, because that would be more of communication that you're looking for.
Right. And letter writers who are more active are better at that kind of communication. This is what I like. And for years, when I've had pen pals, they'll talk about, in length, the books they're enjoying, the movies they're enjoying, why they enjoy it. Ever since I was 13, we've been doing this stuff. It would be much better as a pen pal venture. And even people on the phone, it's better to get their commentary and get it written down with them, put it out there. There's a little bit more of trying to help people get back to the basics with this. That's my hope, because I just see the way that people interact online, it's very depressing. Okay. And the next thing is, we'll go over the scenes.
Oh, yeah.
For 14.
I forgot. That was a while ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
And, oh, yeah. And Milligan and Hecubus, they've been coming through for me so well, because at first I was just ripping off the stuff from the original Pit of Ultimate Darkness skits and altering them slightly. And now I seem to have channeled Milligan and Hecubus, where they're giving me new material. And I was telling Jonah about that when he was over this weekend. And I liked that, and I told him, there's all those Wee Wicked One, I haven't even used that one yet, but maybe Wee Wicked One type of nicknames that Milligan has for Hecubus. And I was getting other things from them, like, why my petite abomination?
That's the one I remember you referencing last
that week, That was good. So, the first scene is Barnabas waking up. Him and Maggie fell asleep on the couch. And we're just going, it kind of in the wows and all that adrenaline, and then finally falling asleep in front of the fire in their clothes yet again. And who does Barnabas wake up to? Scribbling away and whistling.
Oh, the one where Sam is there doing the painting? Is that what you're talking about?
Mm-hmm. And Barnabas like, this isn't what it looks like.
But also, like, Sarah was there.
Yeah, not in the first scene, though. She had left, but that was...
But in the painting. In the sketch.
In the sketch.
Whatever.
Yeah.
I remember that.
And Barnabas recognizes Sam Evans for the previous existence that he had. Sam has to say, well, look at me a little bit closer. And he's like, oh, holy moly. He doesn't say it that way, but he's just like... Oh, I see. That's why you're okay with this. Well, all right. And he's just flat. He's like, I can't believe it. I'm getting everything I want. It's like the ghost of Sarah is okay with him. Josette is Maggie. He's just like, and then he sees.
Or Maggie is Josette.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And then here we have Sam Evans still around, and he is also related to the entire scenario. And he's just like, it's like he can't believe his frickin' luck. And he's all nervous, and he's like, oh, this is my potential father-in-law, and I guess he is again.
Oh, hey, you're that same dude.
Yeah.
Hey, man. Hey, Pops.
Yeah. And then Willie and Wadsworth. I wish, if people who enjoyed the Willie and Wadsworth scene from episode 13, I wish I could see the expression on their faces where you hear the music, the clue music, and it dawns on you, oh my gosh, that would make sense. Oh, and you know, they, he was in Hill House. So there they are, you know, these old buddies, briefly. Old
so
buddies.
Is this still scene one, or are we now
we're
in scene two?
We're in scene two, and we're at Wyncliffe, and Willie and Wadsworth are...
Oh, because he's still, okay. Mm-hmm.
And they're looking around for more booze.
Oh, okay.
Because they've been drinking from...
They're all plastered.
Yeah, they've been drinking from all these flasks that Wadsworth brought with him. And I believe that that would make sense, because he's like, oh, I've got to see Willie Loomis again. I better stock up here. I don't usually drink, but I think now is the time. And it's hard to get Wadsworth interested in a booze, I noticed, because I never really saw him drink in Clue. He was always, unless he sneaks some.
No, he was on duty.
Mm-hmm. And then we get Nurse Jackson for the second time. She was in episode 8, reading a Marilyn Ross novel, or telling Willie about a Marilyn Ross novel. And she just kicking back, you know, as one of the nurses, which made sense to me, because Willie's just at Wincliffe so long, he's got to find some rapport with one of those girls. All right, so we have Sarah, Barnabas, and Maggie in Josette's room going through the crate, which I will need your help with because there's quite a bit of hugging and...
Oh, my.
And that kind of thing going on, which I hope that the people who like this are pleased with that. They won't be married for some time, but that doesn't mean that you can't show affection.
No, yeah.
And, of course, that is when Sarah says, I think we've forgotten somebody. And when this...
Oh, mm-hmm. Okay,
and
yeah.
When this originally came to me, I had this idea where there were going to be more people and the entire household was going to go, you know, it almost seemed like there's the old house and there's all these word bubbles coming out where everybody's screaming, Willie! Can we go get Willie? And it's like, oh gosh! You know, they're all happy and Sarah's saying, thank you for getting someone. And they're just like, oh, we gotta go get him. Oh, he was treated so bad in this whole thing. And then, of course, Sam's like, oh, this is going to be a great idea. I mean, you remember why he went there. This is just a fantastic idea. You're not going to wipe him out with you two being together.
Yeah. It's like, oh, great, let's bring back the petty criminal who, well, we all think was worse than that. But
well, with the kidnapping, he changed.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And people were still quite leery of him, understandably so. But yeah.
That's why Sam's like, oh, Maggie, do you really want to go get him? And she's just like, oh, we've got to go. And my favorite thing is trying to figure out how far away Wincliffe is from the old house or just from Collinsport in general. I think it was like 100, 200 miles. And she even says, Pop, do you want us to walk all the way there? Because they would do it. They would be like, it might take a while, but we're going to go. The next scene is Hoffman and Stokes driving to Wincliffe together. And I added something from the original material that I put together where Stokes mentions that he's glad there's no damage to his brakes. Because Hoffman was driving his car like a mad thing.
Driving it like the Dickens.
Yep. And that's when a little bit more is coming out about how Stokes feels about Hoffman. Do you remember why that's happening?
No.
It's happening because in episode 13, he was already developing a crush on her, but because she's so persistent about saving Barnabas and using his car to do it and going to get, and being a hero, and that's when Stokes is just like, oh my gosh, I want this woman! You know? He's seeing what she's doing and, oh, you know.
She's Wonder Woman!
Yes! So I like that. So he's getting a little bit like, I should at least put in a little bit of mention to her how I feel, which I like, that development of that. And she is just like, oh, and she's trying to figure it out. And she's been so fixated on Barnabas for so long, it's not quite dawning on her what's going on. And then, of course, when they see who's shown up at Wincliffe, meaning Barnabas, Maggie, Sam, she's like, oh, and she's already distracted. She's like, oh, no. Oh, they're here. Oh, my gosh. And Stokes all, well, you better get in there before Willie Lewis collapses from the shock. And then she's all in a hurry. He's all, and you got to call me about this because I want to know what happened.
Let me know how this plays out.
And then, of course, here we have the entourage, as Hecubus says, the entourage for the preservation of Willie Lewis. It's one of my favorite lines ever. They're all running in, hurriedly going in there.
We are the Willie Loomis Preservation Society.
Yes! And then this is the one where there's like six people in a room, and it's so Clue. Like, the way that all the lines are, it's just like, boom, boom, boom. I would like whatever one line that you get a crack up out of. There are so many in this Wincliffe Hoffman's office scene. Because they're all there, like six people. Barnabas, Maggie, Sam, Wadsworth, Willie Loomis, and then eventually Dr. Hoffman rushes in. And Maggie even makes a, I wonder how many of us could squeeze into this office? And meanwhile, you know, even though Willie and Wadsworth have been drinking, Wadsworth's been getting the dust off of things because she hasn't been there enough.
Oh, I didn't remember that.
Yeah.
I definitely remember they were all drinking and everybody was jammed in there, but I didn't remember the dusting.
Yeah, and of course Willie's freaking out. It's just like, what is... Originally, my idea, and this is sort of close to how it is in this episode, he's seeing all this, and then, one, people care about him, and two, Maggie and Barnabas are together. They're, like, holding hands, and he's just like, I don't know what's going on!
You thought I was crazy before. I'm really off the rocker now. Or off whatever.
And he still hasn't broken down yet. And then, of course, I love the thing where Hoffman has trepidation. Like, I guess go fill out the release papers. And she's worried about it. And Sam's like, oh, you're wise. And she's all, hardly, Mr. Evans. I may never play cribbage again because the whole thing is up with that
cribbage bet.
Curse you, cribbage. And then, of course, the scene where I remember walking to and from work and I had audio recordings of Dark Shadows. And after the kidnapping, when Willy goes to try and save Maggie, there was this thing about him getting shot in the back multiple times. I think about five. He had about five wounds, I think. And that got to me because I remembered watching later episodes of Dark Shadows with you, and I was like, they did not address that when he came back. In fact, he was even wielding a rifle, and I was like, geez. So I felt, okay, we're going to address that, because that is a good confrontation for William and Barnabas to have. And it scared me the way it panned out, because I was thinking Barnabas was like, oh, wow, I'm sorry. And he would be shocked by that. I was like, no, something is coming out. The characters are giving me something more, and they're giving something more and something more. It scared me. It actually gave me the chills, the whole thing. I'm still not sure how to get the sound effects down for what Willy shows Barnabas. It's one of the reasons this is a hard one to release, because it was a very hard performance to have Willy. You know, when you came home, I had started to get it down, and you were really good about, I said, close the door, I got Willy down, I'm doing the scene, and you came right in, you were like, okay, I'm shutting the door to the room that you do the performances in. And I really appreciated that. So.
Oh, sure, of course. That's been our understanding.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I guess that was one time where it actually needed to happen.
Mm-hmm. And I remember when this was just in text, you really liked the summary I created when I realized that I could change the summary without updating the original posting date of the first episode. Because I just didn't know how the system worked. And that was something to the effect of, Willy Loomis is back. This tragic confrontation happens. Nurse Jackson shows some wit. And Roger and Elizabeth have a fun chat while opening the mail. It was something like that. And you were like, oh, that's good, you know. The opening mail scene, one of my absolute favorites. And people know a little bit about that from the blooper reel, what they're talking about. And then the final scene with Wadsworth and Willy that really struck me as when Wadsworth was becoming very philosophical and darker and explaining to Willy, you're thinking that there has to be one reason that all this happened. Even in at Wycliffe, and Wadsworth tells him, I'm sure there's been a lot of other people involved. So Willie's reaction to his confrontation with Barnabas sets him into a bigger state of shock. So at the end, Wadsworth and Willy are talking about, how did all of this happen? And Wadsworth is explaining, look, can anything be accomplished by a single individual all alone? Which has been my problem with this whole thing. You know, I can't do it all by myself. I need people to talk to me about it. That really struck a chord with me when that came out of him. Didn't expect it. And then the lovely song that is just so Willy that I was going to use for Barnabas Once Upon a Time, but I was like, no, that's for Willy. And that would conclude the episode 14.
Voila.
Voila.
I don't remember. What's the song?
Donovan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, hopefully people like to hear us together. And also, next time I want to have an interview with an Addams Family writer, because in 15, there's going to be more Addams Family. With Grandmama, Morticia, and Victoria. So, that would work better. All right.
Okie dokie.
So we conclude our workshop interview with Daryl's husband with a kiss, as per normal. Thank you.
Thank you.
And so, hopefully I pick up the commentary through episode 13 so I can release 14, and then more creation will come into play. As I remember, in episode 15, and no one sent me any rolling in the leaves sound effects yet. I gotta go look for them. It just maybe crunchy leaves, and maybe I can find that. I remember asking for help on that for my first intro. There is, in episode 15, some bonding between Willy and Sarah, and I felt the first way it came out was a little awkward. Then 16 and 17, I have some drafts and some notes about. So finishing those up, as well as hopefully getting the ghost of Bill Malloy in there. I know Sheen is excited about that. And with 18, the imagery flashed in my head in, dang, was it April? Well, that's when I saw Bewitched starting to play a bigger role, and Captain Daniel Gregg, of course. So a lot of good stuff to come, and I hope you'll be on the journey with me, talking to me, rather than hiding out or just light-clicking. And the light-clicking doesn't bother me so much with people who have discussed the work with me already, that kind of thing. It's more supportive. But when it's people I haven't talked to, then I'm just left hanging, wondering, huh? Hello? Yes? I'm far too curious about people and motives. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to do all of this. And when one is staggered by the talent of an entertainer, I'm like, well, some of us got it, and likely far more than we realize. And more of us probably have it, which is why I'm trying to introduce tools to break open the mind and the abilities, because that's what The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows has done for me. When I listen to it and I channel the characters and I get more, it's one of the reasons that you're hearing somebody speak so fluidly, and the vocabulary, you know, just studying all of that stuff. So the tandem between text and audio and looking up research and channeling characters, and that's where all of that's coming from, is trying to nurture the talent, that kind of thing. So another reason I would keep wanting my mom to start listening to this, because I noticed when she got the demos, her speech patterns improved. The only problem is she keeps on saying, well, I don't remember the show enough. And I'm like, well, that's because Dad's folks were so darn loud all the time when you watched it in the 60s. You probably couldn't hear a single word of dialogue. But I remember one thing that I really appreciated. She's like, yeah, I remember watching that show and I was starting to get fed up, you know, back in the 60s. She's like, when's he gonna bite somebody? Oh. Just getting fed up with that, you know, and me too. I was a little bit like, why don't they just say vampire? What's the big, oh, well, maybe it's a censorship thing. I don't know. And eventually they did. So, as for episode 14, I decided to let loose episode 13 because I realized it was 14. When I cracked because of Willie not getting the attention he deserved. I know you've got the chat in you. I believe in you. You see, I've been talking to a lot of people that seem to believe it's someone else's job to put the comments in or discuss it with me. If you're listening, no, it's not someone else's responsibility. It's yours. And beyond that, this is a damn entertaining show. It ain't gonna be a term paper if you try. It'll very likely be fun. You try it. You write down some notes. You probably find yourself cracking up at various things that you're writing down when you listen to the episodes. It's only going to go slower if you don't discuss it with me. But in this case, I suppose Mr. Loomis and I are going to be placing some bets. Willie and I have learned a little secret in this last year, and it's very like the wisdom of this gentleman. Take care. Somewhere in the darkness, the gambler, he broke even, but in his final words I found an ace that I could keep. You got to know when to hold 'em, know when to fold 'em, know when walk away and know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done. You got to know when to hold them, when to hold them, know when to fold them, know when to walk away and know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done. You got to know when to hold 'em, know when to fold 'em, know when to walk away, and know when to
The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows is a Daryl War production.